All right, thank you for that. You hear that music at 9:40 Pacific time on Tuesdays. And that means we check in with our friends at SalesportsTalk.com. Rick Tittleback with you, coast to coast and around the world on American Forces Network. Co-hosting this segment with me, as per usual, is our friend Karen Lyle. And Karen is always somewhere on the planet. Today, she is in Portland, Oregon. How are you doing up there in Rip City there, Karen?
Well, it's a little rainy. And actually, on Thursday, the day before I came in, there was black ice and the whole city shut down and planes didn't land and cars stayed home. And it made me think about ice boating.
Yeah, let's talk about ice boating because I don't really know about that. I know about ice fishing. You get a little shack, you cut a hole in the middle of the ice, and you're literally in the middle of a lake. I usually think of that as, you know, part of the Great Lakes area, you know, with Minnesota and Wisconsin and all that. What about ice boating?
Well, ice boating is actually, ice boaters talk about soft water sailing and hard water sailing. So a hard water sailor is an ice boater. And actually, some people that we know who are soft water sailors, like Ben Ainsley of the, who just recently raced and directed the Ineos Britannia team in the Barcelona America's Cup, has also been a hard water sailor on the DN class of boat. And the DN class is a 12-foot long boat. It's a one design. It's one of the most popular. It goes about 70 miles per hour over the ice. And so you have all of these boaters who look for the ice being hard enough so that all of the boaters can fit on the ice without a hole developing. So unlike fishing, they want to stay on top of the ice, not get underneath the ice.
What about Jimmy Spithill? Does he do it?
You know, I think all of these racers, yes. And actually, SailGP had a series of hard boat racing, during the pandemic, the end of the pandemic time, before the SailGP races started up. And so they were doing ice boating.
So this is all, I guess, wind aided, right? So what are we looking at? Like two, like giant ice skates on either side of a plank?
So they have a, well, first of all, I might want to mention that there's all the same types of groups of people are on the ice as are on the soft water. So you have kite boarders, and they call it ice kiting. You have ice windsurfing. You have cruisers, and you have racers. And so the most popular class for racing is the DN class, and that started with the Detroit News calling for a simple boat design in the 1930s that could be made at home by anyone. And so the DN is for Detroit News, and that's actually a class all around the world. They have a race coming up in Finland, February 22nd to March 1st. That's the European Championships for ice boating. So it is a 12-foot boat, and it has about 60 square feet of sail. It has, you know, it's a triangle of skates. So they call it skates. They're, you know, like skaters on, you know, for ice skating have skates. There are skates on the boat, and they have different types of skates based upon the type of surface. So if the surface has some snow, they're going to have one kind of skate. If they have no snow, they're going to have another. And they generally prefer not to have snow. They just want really hard ice with a solid surface and not too many obstacles.
I was looking at the schedule, iceboating.net, and surprised to see, maybe I shouldn't be, I mean, it's cold there, but this goes all the way over to New York and New England, too, huh?
Yeah, actually, they have a New England Ice Yacht Association, and that Yacht Association reports on where the ice is hard enough, and there is not very much snow on the ice so that the boaters can show up. And so there'll be races, but they won't always know where the races are going to be. Sometimes they have to shift the location, you know, it's kind of like, in Portland, people chase the sun, and I guess in New England, the ice boaters are chasing the ice.
So, do you have any other anecdotes from your time in England and all the ribbons and plaudits and cups and saucers you won?
I didn't win any trophies or cups and saucers. Mostly certificates is what they gave me. Actually, the Freedom of the City of London was really a cool plaque because it had in written in calligraphy on sheet parchment the fact that I am now a citizen, stationer, and newspaper maker in the City of London, which I think is pretty cool for an American because I don't have a United Kingdom passport. I'm full-blown American back to 1630s for my family. So,
wow. And then originally from British Isles, is this kind of a homecoming?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's probably why I developed this affinity for it. Actually, when in 2019, right before the pandemic, in October, I went on a tour of Europe, as you recall. And I went through several different countries, including I went to London, I went to Dublin, I went to Malta, Barcelona, Hamburg, Cologne, different, just basically checking out what the sailing was like in these locations and talking to media professionals around the world about Sailsport Talk and whether there were other sail shows that were like ours that go into mainstream sports broadcasting. And to my knowledge, we're the only ones other than, like a particular race might have coverage like Sail GP or America's Cup. They have their own coverage that's very consistent in Fond du Globe, throughout all the media. But we're the only ones who really cover the whole section of soft water and now hard water sailing.
Good stuff. So I'm just interested, too, as I'm an Anglophile myself, and I've been fortunate enough to go over there 12 times, and I've got a lot of friends there. I've spent time there, and I coached football to the police department there. I coached basketball to 14-year-olds in Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire, and they didn't give me crap. So I'm so jealous, but I'm happy that my friend got this honor. So when you go to Heathrow, do they bow down now? Like what type of things that, I'm not saying you have servants, but do they roll out the red carpet in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I'm still able to travel as an ordinary citizen and not have to worry about paparazzi. because you want to know who the greatest celebrities in the world are. It's basically King Charles and the Queen and, Princess Anne and so forth. So the royalty takes all of that and so much hierarchy there that everything is very, set as to what place you're in and where you are in that hierarchy. But, the thing is that what I found really intriguing about the livery companies of London, which are really unique. I mean, they started in about 1100, just after William the Conqueror came in the city of London. And, is that it gave a path. I mean, if we look back at the past, it was a path when there was only, it was a feudal system, so there were only those that were basically set up by the king to own the land, and there were peasants. And so, really, the livery companies were the emergence of a pathway for someone to go from a peasant to acquire the right to be able to do business on their own and to be able to own property. And today, the people who are in the livery companies are actually quite highly placed in society. They are philanthropists, and so they're looking for ways to give back to the community, and they take the rents from the buildings, the guild halls that they have built, and use it to benefit charity, and they also always benefit a military veteran, the military and the veterans, is a very big emphasis. And it kind of comes from back in the day. All of these livery companies, there are 111 of them, had their own militias. And they basically enforced the monopolies that they had on their trade and also protecting their trade and protecting the city. And so if some marauders came to the outskirts of London, you know, the livery companies, militias would go out and fight those battles, just like the Scottish borderlands had, you know, militias to fight the battles, you know, for people invading.
Very good. So, and then the I know you're part of the up and down, in and out club, and all that. What is it like then? Do you get into new clubs? Do you have, like, can you go into areas like White's or Buckingham Palace or something easier? Like, would, or is it mostly just ceremonial?
Well, no, the private, London's private clubs date back to about the 1700s, and they actually started with dining establishments that catered to the aristocracy, and then gradually different clubs formed. But now there are really clubs for everything. I mean, as I mentioned to you, you could belong to the, you could go stay at the Union Jack Club if you were a member of the Marines Memorial in San Francisco as, having formerly served in the American Armed Forces. So there are different clubs kind of focused on a place of recreation. They usually have, they're like hotels. They have, hospitality, so there's usually a dining room. They have breakfast in the morning. They're usually entertainment places. There are kinds of events that happen there. So there's all these, and then they have circuits of relationships with other clubs around the world. So that's something there that has existed. You know, I think it became really, really popular in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And so that circuit of private clubs is kind of basically as a place of recreation for people who are belonging to different social groups. And then the livery clubs are, you know, trade oriented towards the trade that they have. And then you have, certainly I can go to Buckingham Palace by invitation from different sources, like, for example, the former master saddler of the King's Troop Royal Horse Artillery, who gave me a tour of the King's Troop on his last day before resigning. He knows the person, the household guard, and, so sometimes it's just, you get to know people, and then people make invitations, and you're their guest. So, that's just based on friendships and what privileges they have that they can share with others based upon their positions in whatever section of the hierarchy they are in.
The very eclectic and fascinating Karen Lyle. Go to sailsporttalk.com to check out more information there. Karen, thanks for dropping by once again.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Rick. Fellow sailor interested person, huh?
SailSportTalk.com. Thanks, Karen. All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. We'll come on back on Byline.